This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
Hello, everybody. We are back. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. I am your host, Anthony Christensen, joined by the legendary Bob Holt to my right, and of course, Blake Sutton behind the scenes. Bob, of course, is back after an absence last week. Reports came out that he took the day off because he had a wild night on Dixon Street on Monday. Bob, do you have any comment on that?
Oh, that would be erroneous. I just forgot. let's be honest here. And yeah, I'll tell you, the only thing I do on Dixon Street is go to Collier's Drug to get my medications. So my being out late at Dixon Street days are quite a bit behind me.
All right, but of course we have a decent amount of news to talk about. Obviously, the Arkansas men's basketball team getting the commitments of Adu Thierro from Kentucky and John L. Davis from Florida Atlantic, as well as some other news, staffing and everything. Reports coming out that DJ Wagner from Kentucky is going to visit Arkansas this weekend. But I guess just kind of to kick things off, Bob, just kind of looking at how, you know, this roster is starting to come together. I believe now they have 7 scholarship players committed or signed. I guess can you just talk about what you kind of think for, you know, what this roster is kind of looking like, or how you kind of think everything fits together, if that makes any sense. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they're going to add more talented players, but I personally like the roster construction. I think last year Kentucky had 8 freshmen, and I guess that could end up being the case here at Arkansas, but it looks like John Calipari and his staff are putting together, obviously they're getting some really good freshmen that had committed to Kentucky or signed with Kentucky, and that are now following the staff here, and I think that's very normal. You know, the 2 freshman signees here at Arkansas now have committed to USC and Eric Musselman. So I think nowadays players commit to coaches more than they do schools. I don't know if fans like that. That's just the reality of it. Excuse me. I think in most sports. But it looks like a really good combination so far of talented guys, some guys, you know, who are going to be high draft picks, and then some older guys who also could be, you know, NBA players. And, you know, so I like it. It looks like a good mixture of experience, especially SEC experience, whether it was at Kentucky or Tennessee. And then obviously Florida Atlantic went to a Final Four. We talked about Davis. And Tennessee went to an Elite Eight last year, won the SEC title. And so I like how they're putting this team together so far.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned kind of that experience. That was kind of one of the big things that John Calipari was kind of, I guess, criticized for Kentucky, was an over-reliance on freshmen and younger guys just kind of in general. Can you just talk about, you know, do you think that this kind of shows that he's maybe pivoting more towards, you know, trying to have a mix of the two, you know, between older transfers and freshmen, or what do you kind of, I guess, kind of see there?
Yeah, and of course he had some good transfers at Kentucky. You know, Antonio Reeves was a really good player.
Missouri Valley made, yeah, Antonio Reeves.
From Illinois State. But like I said, 8 freshmen last year and some really talented guys. They're going to have some first-round draft choices out of this group that was at Kentucky. But I guess Reed Shepard probably being among one of the top, you know, 5 or 6 guys taken from projections I've seen. And but yeah, I like the fact that, I mean, you want some. I know I've read Kentucky fans got tired of the constant turnover and the one and dones, and you don't want a roster full of those guys probably, with the way the portal is now. But you want some one and done guys. You know, Arkansas didn't have those guys for years. They had some really good players who left after, you know, early. And Corliss, it's hard to believe Corliss Williamson played here 3 years. Joe Johnson, who played in the NBA for I think 17 years, he played here for 2 years. But, you know, I think everybody would agree Moses Moody was a pretty nice player, helped Arkansas get to the Elite Eight. He was a one and done. You know, Anthony Black, great player, just did everything for that team a couple years ago. Nick Smith, if he hadn't gotten hurt, I think he would have been had a really good freshman year, and he was a one and done guy. Jordan Walsh figured things out by the end of the year that he was more of a defensive guy and a rebounding guy that wasn't going to look to score a lot, and he ended up being a one and done guy. And so I think you want some of those guys, because you got to win with talent. But I like to say, I like the mixture of the talent and then the experience, and particularly SEC experience. Mm-hmm.
And talking about guys who were known for their defense and their rebounding, of course, Arkansas, almost said Kentucky, Arkansas got the commitment of Adu Thiero from Kentucky just the other day. I can't remember exactly when. All the days kind of mixed together in my head because I'm kind of losing my mind. But Adu Thiero following John Calipari from Kentucky, when he was out injured kind of midway through the season last year, Kentucky did go in a little bit of a slump. Kind of the main cog of Kentucky's defense when you kind of look at it. He hit a really big growth spurt his senior year of high school and you know, might still be growing if he gets up to that 6'9", 6'10 area. My buddy Zach, who covers Kentucky, told me if he gets up to that kind of height, size, you know, quote, it's going to be very scary. Maybe not a direct quote, but he said something. I know the word scary is something he said. But Adu Thiero following John Calipari from Kentucky, I guess, can you just talk about, you know, having seen him, what do you think, just kind of, just in general?
Well, I think he's a nice pickup. Again, he'll be a guy playing his third year in the SEC, and he'll be playing his third year for this coaching staff. So that kind of carryover, I think, is really important. I mean, he's going to know, he's not going to have to need somebody to teach him the drills and, hey, when the coach says this, what does he mean? Or, you know, how do you react to this? I mean, he knows this coaching staff, so I think that's very important. And you look at his stats, and they don't jump off the page at you. I think what was about 7 points and 4 rebounds, a little over a block. But, you know, he wasn't playing, you know, 38 minutes either. But I really like the fact that he looks to be a guy. He can score, but I like the fact that he seems to be a defensive first guy. You know, he can protect the rim, get boards. Everybody can't take, you know, 15, 20 shots a game, even though sometimes I thought last year's Arkansas team tried to do that. But I like the fact he's a defensive first guy, seems like kind of the quintessential glue guy. And I saw his dad post on Twitter about, you know, improving his three-point shooting. I mean, if you got a big guy that can shoot threes, you know, that's pretty big and muscular and physical, that's a real plus. I think he shot 31% or something like that, which isn't terrible. I mean, that's solid. It's not like he's shooting, you know, 18%. But if he could get that up to that 40% range, that would make him even more dangerous. But yeah, I really like him as a pickup just because of his experience in the league and his experience with his coaching staff.
Zvonimir Ivicic and obviously Adu Thiero coming in from Kentucky. And then the three freshmen as well coming in from, you know, Calipari's kind of recruiting class from last year. How big do you think it is to have, you know, that many guys who are kind of familiar with the staff, kind of the drills, kind of the game plan that those guys are going to kind of have?
Well, yeah, I think that's really big, especially the guys who have actually, you know, played in SEC games for them. But nowadays with the portal, I mean, the turnover on these rosters is just incredible. I mean, people talk about it being like a free NBA free agency. Well, really, how many NBA guys sign one-year contracts? How many NBA guys play for three teams in 3 years or four? In some of these cases, we're seeing four teams in 4 years or 5 years or whatever. So really, this is even more turnover than you see on the pro level for the most part. I mean, I guess there's a few guys who sign one-year deals or two-way deals or whatever, but so I think nowadays where the lack of continuity is just startling at most of the major programs, I think it's really a big plus that guys have, one, played for a coaching staff, and two, you know, been recruited by them, and they know what's expected of them, presumably, and you know, they've seen practices, and they're familiar with these coaches. The coaches should know what buttons they need to push to get the best out of certain guys. I mean, and so I think – the familiarity factor is very important because, you know, the turnovers at almost every, you know, big school now is astronomical.
Mm-hmm. And then just kind of talking about, obviously we mentioned a lot of experience and everything. We've talked a little bit about him, but John L. Davis also committing. I actually had to leave the Bark in the Park baseball game with my dog when John L. Davis committed to go and get my story filed and everything. Dog was not a fan of that, but he did get a baseball from a bush. So he had a good time with that. John L. Davis, obviously coming in from Florida Atlantic, was kind of the guy on a Final Four team, and then was the guy on the only Florida Atlantic team to make consecutive NCAA tournaments. I mean, I mentioned this on Chip's podcast last week. You know, whenever, you know, somebody commits to somewhere else out of the portal, you kind of naturally want to compare him to, you know, player X or player Y. I said, you know, John L. Davis is the guy that you compare other guys to, just because, I mean, he's that caliber of player, or at least he was at Florida Atlantic. You don't want to, you know, speak too soon on, you know, a commit, because you don't really know how things are going to work out. But John L. Davis, obviously one of the biggest names in the portal going to Arkansas, you know, with all that experience, a Final Four, I guess, can you just talk about how big it is to get a guy with not just a lot of college basketball experience, but, you know, winning experience in the tournament?
Yeah, I think that's huge. One thing we talked about with last year's team, and I'm not trying to run anybody down, but some of those transfers, I mean, they're good players, right? We've seen, you know, like Battle transferring to Gonzaga and Tremont Mark going to Texas. And he was a guy that had a lot of success at Houston, individually and team-wise. But some of those guys came from teams that didn't win very much. And so, I mean, obviously you need talent. You can't say, well, yeah, that guy played on winning teams, but how much did he actually contribute? Well, obviously Davis was, you know, arguably the best player on great teams. I mean, yeah, nobody expected him to go to the Final Four a couple of years ago, but that team, I think, did win 30-plus games, even though they were an 8 seed, you know, because they came from the AAC and they don't get a ton of respect. And then this year, I guess they got knocked out in the first round, I think. I'm trying to remember who beat them.
Northwestern.
Okay. But it was an 8-9 game, I believe. And I think when they beat Memphis the year before in the first round, it was an 8-9 game. And so, but yeah, so this guy's used to, you know, doing a lot of things, scoring and playing, you know, making plays for others. And he also won at a really high level. And he's got NCAA tournament experience. And so, I think that's a huge get for Arkansas. I mean, like you said, I think he was one of the biggest prizes out there. He's a guy everybody would like to add to their team. You know, having an older guy like that to help mentor these freshmen. I mean, obviously the coaches coach the team, but with Davis's background, I think he's sort of the, you know, it's a cliche, but he's sort of a coach on the floor, and he's a guy that can lead in practice. He's a guy that can probably get on guys. You know, hopefully they would respect the fact if they're not doing a drill right, or he feels like, you know, okay, you thought you were playing hard in high school. You're not playing hard. This is a different level up here at major college. And so even though he came from mid-major, he played at a high major level. That team did. You know, their coaches at Michigan now, Dusty May. And so I think he can just bring a lot of things to the table just from a leadership standpoint and, you know, obviously the talent he's going to bring to the games.
And you mentioned, obviously, the leadership standpoint, you know, having talked to some people who covered Kentucky and talking specifically about Boogie Fland, there were concerns about whether or not he could step in and be the starting point guard at Kentucky. And one of the big things that was, you know, kind of we talked about was it was really important to get an experienced guard to play alongside him if he's going to be the starting point guard. And obviously they went out and got John L. Davis. That's not to say, you know, we think, you know, one group is going to be starting or not, because obviously they've only got 7 players. There's still a lot more guys that need to come in the door. But having an experienced guy like John L. Davis to play with, you know, guys like Boogie Fland or Carter Knox or, you know, Billy Richmond, or even as Zvonimir Ivicic, who didn't play a ton last year at Kentucky, I think is a very big, very big deal, and something that Calipari and his staff obviously wanted. And then just kind of talking about John L. Davis's game, obviously not playing in the SEC, so we didn't get to see him as much. I'm a sicko, so I would always watch, you know, whatever games were on the television. But can you just talk about how you kind of maybe feel he would maybe fit into a Calipari system?
Well, yeah, I think he'll be a good fit. If you look at Florida Atlantic's schedule, they played, a lot. I think they was right. They played A&M, Memphis, mm-hmm. Not Memphis. Well, maybe, well, they obviously played Memphis in their league. I think they played Arizona. I forget, but they played 5 or 6 teams from, quote, what the power leagues are, whatever you want to call it. So he played at a high level. But, yeah, I think he's a guy that's going to come in and score real well. I mean, he's a guy that can go get a shot. Now, sometimes, I mean, you look at, you know, Tremont Mark had some big scoring games. Obviously, Battle had some big games. But sometimes I don't know if they could take guys off the dribble like you'd like to see, you know, guys can. He's a guy that can take over a game if needed. But I also don't think he's gonna he'll get his teammates involved. I mean, that's why they won at Florida Atlantic. You know, he's a superstar player, let's face it. But I also think he gets other guys involved. I mean, when the ball goes to him, it's not a black hole. You don't ever see it again. He seems like a good facilitator. And now he's going to have, you know, as good as Florida Atlantic was, and they had everybody back, I think, from their Final Four team, you know, he's probably not had this kind of talent around him. I would think that's a fair statement, just pure talent. And so my guess is he's going to really enjoy playing with these young guys and leading them. And, you know, I think he's a good defensive player. I think he can be help you win in a lot of different ways.
And I know last time, or not last time, but, you know, after John Calipari was first hired and there was just, you know, Lawson Blake on the roster, you know, we talked probably way too early about, you know, expectations going into next season. But now that we're kind of starting to see a plan, we're starting to see, you know, a roster kind of come together and a lot of very, you know, talented pieces. I guess, can you just talk about, is there any update on what you think expectations going into year one should be? Or is it still a little too early to kind of say? Or what are you kind of thinking there?
Well, yeah, you go online and some of the national guys have their way too early poll. And of course, it's really hard to put these preseason polls together because in the past, you know, okay, well, they've got these three starters back and they've got these signings from the fall and this is their team. Well, now, you know, rosters are changing, evolving week to week. And, but I've seen Arkansas, you know, go from, I don't know, being 45 or something up to like top 15. My guess is by the time it's all said and done, of course, these are preseason projections. I mean, people remember last year Arkansas was 14th in the preseason AP poll and the coaches poll. So it wasn't just the media that screwed that up. It was the coaches, too, I being one of the AP voters. It just didn't come together last year. But I believe, you know, you look at the talent they've added and then obviously, you know, the cachet that John Calipari brings, I would expect Arkansas to be – I'll say this, I will not be surprised if Arkansas is preseason top 10 in the AP and coaches polls and Athlon and whatever, you know, polls are out there, and there's a bunch of them now. I would expect Arkansas to be definitely in the top 20, maybe in the top 10. And the expectations at a minimum would be an NCAA tournament. I mean, that should always be the expectation at Arkansas. That's what made last year so disappointing, because you kind of felt like Arkansas was beyond screwing around and not getting in the NCAA tournament, because, you know, Eric Musselman had taken him to three straight NCAA tournaments and had Elite Eight and Sweet 16 runs, and he'd taken his last three teams in Nevada to the NCAA tournament, a Sweet 16 run. And last year, for whatever reason, it just didn't work. It was just a bad – you know, they had a couple good wins, like over Duke and at A&M and some other wins, but not good overall. But, yeah, to me, the minimum expectations at Arkansas should be NCAA tournament. And – you know, I think there's going to be pressure on them to make a run because of what's happened with Calipari at Kentucky the last couple of times. I mean, losing to Oakland and then losing to St. Peter's before that. And so, the expectations for Arkansas are probably going to be, like I say, preseason top 15, top 10, and NCAA tournament. Anything less than NCAA tournament would be, to me, a massive disappointment. I mean, he's only getting paid $7 million a year plus bonuses and everything else to go to the NIT or whatever. So I think the expectations are going to be very high.
Mm-hmm. And I know we're reporters, so we don't root for anything, but I would also like to cover the NCAA tournament because I haven't done it yet. But
well, yeah, it's a lot of fun. To me, it's the greatest sporting event there is. You know, people may say, oh, the World Series or the Super Bowl or the NBA playoffs. You know, one thing about the NCAA tournament, it's like the NBA playoffs in that it's over a long period of time. But, yeah, the NCAA tournament's basically like – and it's March Madness, right? It takes up the entire month of March for the most – well, a couple last 3 weeks in March after conference tournaments and then into April for a Final Four. So it's a really cool event because it goes on, you know, for 4 weekends. And then all the different rounds and the upsets and, you know, you've got the big-name schools and then you've got some schools that people don't know much about, like Oakland and – you know, and the thing is, everybody loves the upsets unless it's their team, you know, right? And like everybody loves seeing Oakland beat Kentucky, except the Kentucky fans or whoever it might happen. And if you go to the tournament, I don't crucify a coach who gets beat early with a high seed, because it happens to everybody. It happens to Bill Self It happens to John Calipari. It happened to Billy Donovan. I mean, if you go to the tournament every year, it's going to happen to you. And the key is to keep getting there. And when you're going to have some first-round upsets or second-round upsets, and you're going to get some Final Fours and national titles too. So, but, yeah, to me, the NCAA tournament is the best sporting event there is.
And then just kind of looking at, the next pieces of, this roster that they're kind of putting together. Obviously, DJ Wagner, another transfer from Kentucky, he's kind of he's been reported to be visiting Arkansas this weekend. He also, fun little tidbit, he had a visit with USC as well, reportedly. So obviously another potential guy coming over from Kentucky, a guy we've watched since we're both SEC reporters. I guess just talk a little bit about DJ Wagner and what he would bring should he decide to go to Arkansas.
Yeah, he's a nice player, and that's an interesting point. You bring up a little tug of war there between Cal and Musk, possibly. But if I'm trying to, if I recall, he had a good game against Arkansas in Lexington. He missed the game in Fayetteville. I hope I'm not screwing this up, but I think that's right. And he's a nice player. I mean, he's a guy that can score in bunches. He can get. He kind of reminds you, if you're old enough, you remember Vinnie Johnson, the microwave, who played for the Pistons, and he was at Baylor. This is before Baylor was really thought of as a basketball school back in the 80s. But he's a guy that can, get hot and go on a streak by himself. I mean, he can go on a run by himself, an 8-0 run or 10-0 run or whatever. And so, yeah, he'd be another really nice pickup. And he was hurt some as a freshman. That's one thing Kentucky, that people don't seem to talk a lot about. They had a lot of injuries last year, so I think that might have hurt their cohesion. It's hard enough with older players, but if you got a bunch of young guys and they get hurt and miss games, and people don't think about missing practices. Sometimes guys don't miss games, but they're not practicing much, especially if they're young. It's hard to get better that way. It's not ideal, I don't think. And so I think sometimes people minimize the impact of practice, positively if you're doing it and negatively if you're not able to practice for whatever reason, you got nagging injuries. But, yeah, I think he'd be a huge pickup. And, again, he'd be going into a second year in the SEC, and he'd be going into a second year with his staff if he ended up coming to Arkansas. And so I think that would be a huge plus.
And then, obviously, we've got some staff news as well that's come up since the last time we had a podcast. Obviously, Kenny Payne is coming on board after his two seasons at Louisville as head coach there. Which obviously did not go very well, but he really made his name as Kentucky's kind of second in command behind John Calipari. A lot of NBA players, obviously talking about how big of an impact he had on their kind of experience at Kentucky. And then also they've announced the additions of Chin Coleman and Chuck Martin as well to the staff. Obviously both those guys following Calipari from Kentucky as well. I guess, can you just talk about, your thoughts on the staff and just kind of, and it kind of plays into, what we talked about with the players, kind of that continuity and how important that is.
Well, yeah, these are guys, they were Cal's guys, Kentucky. And as you mentioned, Kenny Payne went to Louisville and it didn't work out. That's an understatement. Sometimes guys are really, really good assistants, and maybe they're not cut out to be a head coach for whatever reason. But, Arkansas fans probably remember that when Calipari got ejected in the 2020 game in Fayetteville, and Arkansas hit some free throws from that and had, I think, a 47-44 lead with about 8 minutes left. And Kenny Payne was the next in line on the bench, so he took over for Cal. And Kentucky went on like an 18-2 run or something. I'm not saying it's all Kenny Payne, but he obviously did a good job of holding that team together. And a lot of people, I don't think Calipari ever admitted this, but that he probably got ejected on purpose to fire up the team, maybe fire up the crowd to get his team, riled up in a hostile environment. But so Kenny Payne, at least for the last 8 minutes, he led a Kentucky comeback. But things did not go well at Louisville. But he's obviously a guy who knows Cal well. Cal feels comfortable with him. Even if things didn't go well at Louisville, I think having head coaching experience can be a good thing. Chuck Martin, I think, was the head coach at Marist. It didn't go well, but again, head coaching experience. But it's sort of like he's getting the gang back together again, because Kenny Payne left Kentucky and I think was the Knicks assistant for a couple of years. Then he got the Louisville job. So I think he's back with Cal for the first time in 5 years. He's probably pretty hungry after things didn't go well at Louisville, wants to help his his friend do well in this new role. And then the other coaches, they're obviously familiar with Cal. They're familiar with these players that they're getting from Kentucky, too, and vice versa. And so really no surprise. Usually when a coach, goes somewhere, most of his assistants follow. And you look at all the success these guys have had recruiting and then on the court, and it's understandable why he'd want to keep that group, you know, intact.
And that is what we have for all of you guys today. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. For myself, Anthony Christensen, Bob Holt right beside me, and Blake Sutton behind the scenes, thank you all again for tuning in. We will see you next week.